Hello, everyone. I'm Lawrence Gowan from Styx.
And I'm Kelly Hansen from Foreigner. And you are listening to Life Minute TV.
Two legendary groups, Styx and Foreigner, have joined forces this summer, and they're bringing special guest John Waite along for the ride. The Renegades and Jukebox Heroes Tour will make stops all across the country through the end of August. VIP packages also available with meet and greets and other fun things on the band's websites. They're also releasing a special limited edition collector's album that you can get only at the shows until it hits stores and online on July 12th. We caught up with Foreigner's Kelly Hansen and Styx's Lawrence Gowan recently to hear all about it.
It's been 10 years since we toured with Styx, and when I found that out, I was kind of mind blown. It's been a while, you know, so it's really great to be back together with these guys. These guys are so amazing. So great on stage, super crisp, on point vocals. It's really a great show to see.
There's no stopping that double bill. I mean, it's quite astounding. And honestly, what I loved about the last tour we did, Kelly, was we each band, you know, there's an underlying competitive spirit that we really want to be great on the night. But as the tour goes on, you become kind of the best cheering section of the other band, because the overall experience of having nearly 4 hours of classic rock, you know, with John Waite opening and then with Styx and Foreigner, you've got so much music that has touched so many lives and been the soundtrack of their experience. You really get caught up in it yourself. And I love watching Foreigner perform. They're an astounding band to watch perform. And just those songs, one after another, it's just bang, bang, bang. And I have as good a time as anybody in the audience.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's great.
And how is it going to all come together? Like, will you guys ever be on stage together? Or
we haven't even thought about that, talked about that. You know, I think both of us are so busy doing what we're doing at the moment that it's like that's something that's coming up that we haven't even gotten around to. But it's not the normal thing for that to happen. But you never know. What I enjoy about doing these shows is they got many good singers lead singing songs in Styx, and it's great to be around so many singers, because in my life I don't really know too many singers or interact or kind of socialize with singers. It's usually always musicians, and there's a little bit of a difference between a musician and a singer when a singer's not a musician. I mean, Lawrence is both. I like that energy, because singers, you know, they get each other, they get it, and it's nice to be around someone who gets it.
But 10 years ago when we did the tour, which was one of our most successful tours ever, and already the ticket sales have exceeded that for this summer tour, but I would see Kelly come in mid-July with a scarf around his neck, and it's like, good idea. Now, there's nobody else who would say that to, you know, other than when you commiserate with all the various things that conspire against someone who has to deliver vocals, and especially what he's got to do every night, where he's up in the clouds, you know, and at the top of his lungs. And but man, that fella delivers.
Well, I always enjoy Lawrence prancing around in his underwear, so backstage.
That is a show in itself. And if you want to know why sales are so high, it's because of the underwear prancing that has become so ubiquitous stage antics.
How do you guys hone your voice?
You know, it's funny, because I've been doing this professionally for almost 50 years. I think you tend to forget and tune out the myriad things that you do to take care of your voice. I mean, so much for me is just like automatic. Like when I'm on the road, I'm not speaking a lot. I'm not yelling. I'm not laughing too hard. I'm not staying up late telling rock stories, you know, drinking beer in the middle of the night. And all of these things just become an automatic part of your life. And it isn't till the end of the year when we have a little bit of a break, like a 2 or 3 month break, and you kind of go, oh, I'm a little bit more socially involved, and I'm actually partaking in the energy of a social experience, because I kind of let go of my voice a little bit. But during the year, it's like I have to tell people who are close to me, I have to say, if I sound like I'm monotone and if I sound like I'm unhappy, just know I'm not. I'm just taking care of my voice. And it's a constant 24/7 thing, at least for me, that is. I mean, Lawrence probably doesn't have to think twice about it, but I have to think about it all the time.
I would go along with the fact that if you don't get to bed, you know, first in the band, right, and stay up drinking and you know, you're having a great time on the tour bus, which of course we're doing. I don't want to spoil the myth and the fantasy of it all. But I actually look at it like the early part of your career, and we've had this discussion. It's like, if I was to compare it to an athlete, you're in a sprint. So it's a sprint to where you got to get to the finish line as fast as you can, and you can burn every candle at every end that you wish to. But as a career goes on, you have to look at it more like it's a marathon, particularly if you're one of the singers. And in order to do that, you really have to address every single little domino that has to be lined up just the right way in order to fall in your favor when you hit the stage. And look, when there's 15, 16, 17,000 people there, there actually is, and I know this word isn't used often in rock, but there is a kind of a responsibility that you want to put the best version of what you can do with your voice on stage every night. As we tour with classic rock bands, there's only, when I try to count them in my head, I get to maybe 12 classic rock bands that are touring on the level that Foreigner and Styx are to this day. And to every person, Heart would be another example, you can see just how they address their overall health and their overall condition is part of continuing on this marathon that we want to go on forever. Unlike marathon runners who probably want it to end immediately. We just want it to continue on.
And how did this tour come together? Like, how did you guys say, oh, let's do this again?
It worked really well last time. I think that was probably at the top of the equation. I think, you know, look, we've also become such good friends with these guys, you know, Jeff Pilson and other guys, you know, Michael Bluestein and stuff. We send messages every once in a while. I hear from these guys at least once a year about how things are going, or more often. And we love, you know, the fact that we have survived this long and the fact that people just in droves want to keep coming and seeing it. What it comes down to is we know we're going to have a great summer just with each other's company anyway. And then there's going to be several thousand people there night after night after night with great big grins on their faces and their arms in the air and just enjoying what this music has done to their lives. So that's a pretty easy thing for the agents and managers and accountants and all of the professional scientists to go into this equation.
Right, yeah. Right. And the two things. It is not lost on anybody involved how fortunate we are and how wonderful it is to have these shows and people still coming to see this band and still having the excitement and the energy, because you could play a crowd where the audience is dead as doornail and you have to really, it becomes a lot of work. And our audiences are really interactive, and that's really great. But the second thing is that when you're on the road and it's difficult and it's hard like this for us, I mean, it's not like tarring roofs in the summer when you're a redhead, but for musically speaking, it's hard. But when you see friendly faces backstage, and there's an ease that settles over you backstage, and that I think is then reflected on stage, because you're having an easy time backstage, because you can play with bands who are really unfriendly or full of ego or really a problem, and it makes it a more tense vibe. But when you can walk around backstage and you see ease on everybody, it makes the show better. And I think that's another reason why we decided to do this again, because I mean, I don't want to go on tour with punks or, you know, idiots. And I'm sure Styx doesn't want to either. So that makes it an automatic yes. And because it had been so long, because both of us are so doing so many things, it's nice to be able to converge once again. You know what? And the thing is, it's time. It's not like we did this last summer together. So it's been a while. So it's a really good time for us to come back together, especially when we're doing our farewell tour.
Is it really farewell?
Well, you know, we're not going to tour 9 months a year anymore, partly to Lawrence's point. These songs, you want to deliver them at the standard that they and the audience deserves. And the songs I'm doing are not easy. It's a challenging set of wonderful songs. And I'm really grateful to be able to have the opportunity to sing. Like, if you're a singer, you couldn't have asked for a better set of songs to sing, except unless you were in Styx. But I can't keep doing it at this level all the time for 9 months a year. It takes too much out of me. I'm 62 now, I'll be 63 in a month, you know, and I have a new wife and family, and I want to kind of live my life and do things that I can do while I still can do them. There are different kinds of people. Some people have to die on stage. That is their lot in life. They are so artistic and so driven musically that they are going to play until the day they die, hopefully on stage. And I'm not one of those. I love doing this, but I have a lot of other passions in my life as well. And I, like I said, I don't want to do this less than it deserves.
And what's next? What is next for you?
Honestly, we don't look much far beyond, to Kelly's point. You know, if you think of it in terms of we're going to be touring for 9 months a year. We don't really think of that as part of it. I mean, I don't anyway. I look ahead and kind of go, you know, let's hope that the gods of rock keep smiling on us for another month. You know what I mean? And so I'm looking at the summer tour of like, oh, this is going to be, it's going to be a great mountain to climb. And hopefully we're going to get to the other side of it. But I take nothing for granted, nothing at all. So maybe this is part of what makes the show so magical as well, is that everyone performs as if this could be their last time on stage. Hopefully they're not going to die on stage, but but it could be. And that's the kind of level that you want to perform at. And that, to Kelly's point, that really is it. You really want to make sure that it's not going downhill, that it's not, you know, decreasing in its quality and how it's delivered. You want to see people's faces lifted to that ecstatic state that you see audiences at the end of every night, because there's something astounding about that moment. There's something about the communication of music that is just, we still can't fully comprehend what it does to people. But when it's delivered on a level that's really, you know, can lift them to that height, you're up there with them. That's what I'm doing next. That's my plan anyway.
So great. It's so great. What are fans going to get when they see this show?
There's going to be like unbelievable number of songs that everybody in the audience knows. And that's one of the incredible elements of it. In the 1980s, both these bands had some hits, but now all these years later, the cumulative amount of hits that are going to be on stage, like almost every song is going to be something that everybody knows. You know, you try to put in a slightly deep cut here and there for those fans who want to hear something, not just the hits, but that's what it's going to be about. And also too, I know these guys and I know the energy they bring. And when we're going out there to give someone a reprieve from everyday passes of life for a few hours, you want them to feel like a sense of elation and energy, and that they could forget everything else in the world for a minute and do that. So that's what they're going to get. And I'm just really thrilled to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's about 4 hours straight of music that, you know, another point I have to say, classic rock is the great musical statement of the last half of the 20th century. That's indisputable now. And its value is even further amplified by the fact that half the audience on any given night are usually under 40 years of age. They weren't even born when some of this music came into the world. So they want the experience that we who grew up with it, they live it as if it's concurrent with their existence. So it really has to be held to the highest standard. That's what we push ourselves to do.
What are your favorite songs to play live?
I love Renegade so much because Tommy Shaw, you know, it's his song and he sings it, and it's one that I don't have all that much responsibility for in the vocal department. There's only a couple of areas there. But usually by the time we get to Renegade, what I've observed is it's usually the last song. Wherever we've played around the world, I am amazed at how different audiences are at the beginning of a show. If we've played in Japan, the audience has a certain tenure, a certain personality to it. If we're in Sweden, if we're in England, or if we're in America, or even if we're in Canada, it's amazing how different they are at first and how alike they are at the end. This has been my global observation. It's just how alike people are at the end of a show when you see thousands of them with this same euphoric sense of shared experience that really is, it's I don't, I might sound too lofty, but it's such a uniting moment that you feel. And I'm able to observe that from my spinning keyboard stand because Tommy sings that has the big responsibility on that song. And I get to observe that. So that's become my favorite moment on stage. And I have my favorite Foreigner moment too, but I want Kelly to tell me what his is.
I think I'm slightly different than a lot of people in this way, because I get asked this question a lot. And I realized that I'm not a favorites type of person, because the philosophy of best, worst, favorite, least favorite tends to say that one thing is less than another. And I like to look at these things as individual things. And what I say is, I look at these songs as a beautiful basket of ripe fruit. And I'm lucky enough to be able to say, today I really loved an orange, and yesterday I really liked an apple, because this catalog of songs is so good that there's not one I'm trying to skip past. There's so many variables in a night on stage. Is it indoors, outdoors, large crowd, small crowd, humid, dry? You know, do you hear yourself really well? Is the stage cement or is it wood? You know, all those things affect how you feel about a particular song every night. So one night will sound really great in my ears for this song, and another night sounded great on this song, but they're both great songs. And so that's how, what I take out of it.
That's a great point. I've been asked a similar question. It reminds me of your favorite pieces of art. You know, one right. day you happen to be looking at one and you're getting something from it on this day that's vibrating with you or resonating with you in a way that it didn't yesterday, because it was that painting over there that was doing it for you. But in this case, you're not just the observer of it, you're living in it. You're living inside that song as it's being delivered. And all of those things that Kelly, that you just outlined are all participating in that, that part of that 24-hour experience that you're connecting with. So yeah, I would say Renegade is my favorite moment on stage. But to your point, yeah, it's a different, it's a moving target. Every night's right. different.
Yeah.
And you said you had a favorite of Foreigner's. What's your favorite Foreigner moment on stage?
There's two of them. I love Cold as Ice, because when I heard that song the first time, it had so many Beatlesque elements to it. And the last time we toured together, I think you might remember, Kelly, when we were doing a promotional tour together, Mick Jones told a great Beatles story about Young and his career. And so that kind of elevated Cold as Ice again in my mind as to that kind of Beatlesque connection that I love in so many bands, in particular in Foreigner. But I want to know what love is that it's such a high point every night. They do something, I don't want to give it away, but they do something every night that is just, it's goosebumps. So there you go.
I have to ask you about Mick. How is he doing? And will he be taking part a little bit in the production or the planning?
Well, you know, Mick is always at visionary at the top of what we're doing. And, you know, the great thing that he and I have had for these 20 years is that we feel so similar about certain things. Like, he has always been a very much like show must go on kind of guy. And when I thought a show was going to be over because it was raining, he steps up front and plays, you know, the next song. I'm like, what? We're still, oh, wow, okay. And he always is like that. And his musical taste and choices and his ears are beyond reproach. I mean, they used to have a term back in the day, if someone had big ears, and he's got really big ears. And that means that he's very aware musically of not only what's gone on in the past, but what's happening now. And when we're in the studio, he'll hear a noise that no one else will hear. And he'll go, hey, what was that? And we'll have to pare down all the tracks. We'll find out it was like a squeak on a guitar that we have to fix, you know, or something. And he's always been that way. And he always wants to be on the road with us. He's doing great. He's scheduled to be with us whenever his doctor says it's okay for him to be with us. And absolutely, I'm hoping to see him out with us as much as he can be.
Who were you guys' favorite singers of all time?
Anyone?
Don't say each other.
No, we'll say that to each other backstage.
That's a given.
No, I'd say all four of the Beatles. I would say Freddie Mercury, I got to put way, way up there. Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel, and I would add in there Little Richard. There you go.
I got like Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, Dinah Washington. I really am influenced by R&B and blues, and I've always liked that vibe and feel for me. So, you know, plus all the guys he's mentioned, there's so many. And yeah. Again, it's a favorites question, so. There you go.
And of course, Foreigner will get inducted finally into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
The reality is the induction is for the original members of the band. Who knows? Maybe some of us will be there if we're going to play. I'm just going to humbly be available to help in whatever way I can. It's nice for a successful classic rock band that came out in the 70s to be recognized, just like Styx should be. And the thing is that you have to remember, back in the day, if you were a popular commercial pop rock band, you were not a favorite of the critics. They always put you down because you weren't artsy enough or different enough or off the wall or small enough, you know, because when you're small and unrecognized, only you know about them and they're cool. But as soon as they become popular, you're not good anymore. But the fact of the matter is that if you're touching people and communicating to people more than that hidden band in the corner, that says something about your influence. That says something about the power of what you're doing. And I'm glad to see that be recognized.
What does music do for people?
It's funny, Beethoven, toward the end of his life, you know, because I studied classical music, I love reading about composers, and he even questioned, what is music? What does it, why does it affect people? What exactly is it? He didn't even know. So we know that it's probably the highest form of language and communication. This is what I've seen in my life. Over the course of my life, it's the one thing I think lacks the capacity to ever let you down. It just, it's not in there for it to let you down. It's always going to kind of give you something in the worst moments of your life and in the greatest moments of your life and in the kind of the mundane moments of your life. It's always got something to contribute that just lifts you to a place that, you know, humans can attain. And I've only seen attained really through the inspiration of music. So,
yeah, you know, that's an interesting point you make. You know, what is music? Because if you have a meditation bowl, it makes one tone, you know, and that's singing a song in a sense. And you notice that they'll play classical music for plants and it has a palpable effect on plants. It's something that we haven't deciphered. It's one of those things that we don't know why, but we're all just trying to feel our way into something that does connect when we're doing what we do. And that's the magic and the mystery of what sound is. And all we're doing is a combination of those things in a way that touches us first. And if it does, then we hope other people, you know, get on the bandwagon with it and they get something out of it too. It's just a very mysterious, wonderful thing.
I love that question, though, further to that, because this is a great thing to discuss. And I love the way that you framed the question as well, Joanne. I've also observed audiences and with friends that I've had that I've grown up with, the ones who've stayed close to music and kept it in their lives, whether they're, you don't have to be a musician, just the fact that you engage with music in some way every day, it's one of the most revitalizing things. I mean, I speak to guys that are still listening to music all the time, and we pick up our conversation as if it was very recent. Unfortunately, I've met other people that I knew so well who were once like that, who've lived lives that have had to kind of maybe check their soul at the door or whatever, you know, whatever phrase you want to use, where they've become disengaged or, you know, they've parted from that kind of musical connection that they had in their life. And I observe not good things. So I think there are health benefits. I do know now that there's musical therapy and things in hospitals, et cetera. And there are reasons for all this. We see people that are suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's, and suddenly put the headphones on them. We've all seen this, you know, the man who's like 98 or something and suddenly starts singing a song that was in his youth. What a phenomenal, fantastic thing it is. And to be part of that and to bring that out, you know, on stage and celebrate it with thousands of people. I can't think of a better life. I mean, I really can't.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.